Hi, I'm Zach Hunter, Sports Information Director for the BYU Men's Track and Field Team. I've had the privilege of working with the current and former BYU athletes headed to the 2024 Paris Olympic Games, like Kenneth Rooks, Courtney Waymont, and James Corrigan, to name a few. I've also been able to work alongside amazing individuals, such as coaches, trainers, and sports scientists that have helped these athletes reach the next level. Here at BYU, we've seen success breeds success. It's an exciting time to be a Cougar fan. 9 current or former BYU athletes are headed to the Olympic Games, with a record 8 representing Team USA, many of which will be able to sit down and hear their stories. Each episode, we'll talk about where these athletes are from, what principles and values they have learned here at BYU, and what they expect on the world stage in Paris. Today we sit down with current steeplechase runner James Corrigan. This is Cougar Gold.
There is no silver bullet. There's no like secret sauce. And I know people are going to say, well, then how did you jump 33 seconds? Or how did you jump 40 seconds over the last year, you know? Sometimes you just have to be patient. Things happen when they're going to happen, but there's no silver bullet. There's no quick fix or easy way to get where you want to go. It's just about making good, consistent choices.
A 22-year-old headed to the Olympics. James joined the BYU track and field program after taking off 2 years of athletic competition after high school to serve a mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. He ended his freshman season with a personal best of 8:52.54 in the 3,000-meter steeplechase, a 7.5-lap race around the track involving barriers and a water pit. James quickly accelerated his performance, becoming the 2024 Big 12 steeplechase champion. He finished 9th at the NCAA Outdoor Championships, then competed at the U.S. Olympic Trials just 2 weeks later, where he surprised the world by taking 3rd. Normally, the top 3 go to Paris, but due to a low world ranking and not a fast enough time, James was out of contention. Through a series of events that took place days later, James was able to race one more in an 11th-hour bid at the Penn Relays Summer Showcase, where he beat the Olympic standard, running a school record of 8:13.87, and guarantee him a spot to Paris. Oh, and he also got married 6 days later. James is an amazing athlete, and one of the most level-headed people I know. We talk about what his mindset is like, and how he's really dealt with his unexpected success, and how he will approach the starting line in Paris. Okay, thanks so much, James, for sitting down and talking with me today. I'm super excited to talk about your insane journey to the Olympics. It's out there for sure. I'm not sure if anyone's had a similar path as you, but thanks so much for coming in today.
Yeah, you bet. I'm super excited to tear it apart.
All right, let's do it. Okay, so I do want to just right off the bat talk about what was that experience like in Pennsylvania when you're crossing that line and you ran an 8:13 to qualify for the Olympics. What was that moment like?
It was crazy. I mean, there was so much more pressure riding on that race than there were any others, just because I could be a complete underdog. No one really knew me besides my family and friends in the trials races. So in Pennsylvania, to not only have everybody know about it online, but to be promoting it myself, just brought a lot of pressure that I think the night before I was like, man, did I really want all this pressure? You know, this is a lot. And it was kind of getting to me. And so to really be able to hone in and to run the 8:13 to do it and smash what I needed, it was just a sigh of relief crossing the line. And then just to be able to enjoy all of it was the coolest feeling and everything that came with that.
Well, let's talk about what that buildup was like, okay? Sure. So your outdoor NCAA season, I guess let's just take this a step back. You are the only current BYU athlete to make an Olympic team. So props to you, James.
Thank you.
So you are a sophomore here, or mm-hmm. you ended your sophomore season this last June. So you took 9th in the finals of the men's steeplechase at the championships in Eugene. So you're not really in the top mix of that. What took you from there to the Olympic trials where you placed 3rd? What was that jump like?
Yeah, I mean, I think the jump for everybody else was huge. I think the capacity didn't necessarily make a jump. Just what people saw in terms of my performance certainly made a jump. And so in order to do that, you know, you can't, it doesn't happen overnight. I think the ninth place finish for me was some growing and experiences that were very needed, but weren't a reflection necessarily of where I was at that week. And so learning to make a 2-day turnaround from a prelim to a final was really essential for me, and it was difficult. And so that was able to help me in the trials. But I think that if you kind of zoom out and look at my season, at least for me, it makes it a little easier to see that progression. It felt a little more normal, even though it is still pretty crazy, right? You go from last year I finished with like an 852. And so I opened with an 850, and then I hopped into 840s, and the next race was 830s, and the next race is 820s. And then it's a big jump to then do another 10-second jump. But for me, I think I knew that the capacity was there. So I wasn't shocked when I placed ninth. I was disappointed. But then I also wasn't shocked when I ran the times that I did. I think the places was, you know, pretty stellar, and that was pretty shocking to me. But I know people are going to see just that little tidbit. But that's not always how running goes, you know? Like, very rarely are people going to make huge jumps like that. And so I guess for people to know, I mean, it's a great story, and so you can make it as tall of a tale as you want to, but in all reality, you need to be at the level you're going to perform at, and sometimes you just don't get a chance to show that, and then everything lines up on the right stage, and people see that one performance, and so that's what happened.
Well, I just remember from my perspective, so I was with you after the race, I was grabbing a quote from you, and I was like, hey, you finished ninth. And okay, so just from my perspective as the director of communications, I can never tell if the athlete is just very like excited about their performance or not, okay? Because I have an outside perspective.
That's right.
And so walking up to you, and you were just very level-headed about your performance placing ninth. You're just like, yeah, I had a 2-day turnaround. Never have done that before in my career, but I'm excited to see what happens at the trials. And that just really stood out to me in that moment of like, okay, James obviously wasn't like down in the dumps, or he wasn't just on cloud nine. He was just like, this is just a learning experience for me.
Right.
And so when you took that to the Olympic trials, what was your expectations going in with Kenneth Rooks? We feel he's going to take the number one spot. You're a former teammate. What was your expectations like?
Yeah, I mean, I always just race to win, especially in championships. I've been trying a lot this year to focus on racing, just race. It's the reason we go to championships. And if you're not in a spot to place first, you're racing with the intent to win. But, you know, second's great, third's great, but we always race to win. And so I think that my intent was to go and get top three. But I've got to say, like, hindsight's 20/20. Like, emotionally, you don't prepare for that. Like, it's just not something you can always picture. But you need to do your best and race with that intent and make choices based off that. But I will say going in, I was just like, my initial thought was, let's just beat as many people as we can. And it gave me a sense of even more like underdogness, if that's even a phrase, you know. So I'd say going in, I was really, really excited just to beat as many people as I could and just see if I could race a faster time, because I wanted to kind of improve on my PR. But I think leading up to like the day before, I was really honed in on, okay, let's get a top three. Let's race like that. Let's be confident. And yeah, you've never beat any of these guys. And technically, you know, eight more guys in the NCAA beat you. So this seems impossible, but it was an exciting challenge. So I looked forward to that race a lot.
Well, watching it from home too, I was all alone watching this. And I see the start. I'm like, okay, Kenny's in the top mix. Oh, and then the camera like about cuts when James is in there. And I was like, okay, this will be the story of the race. But then you pick it up and then we see Kenneth crosses number one, right? Pretty much solidifies a spot in Paris with that number one spot. But then you're coming around the mix too with that last 200 to go. There's an awesome video too out there for listeners and viewers to watch, but it's of Ed Eystone, Coach Eystone going nuts. Look at James. So what's that last lap like?
Yeah, that was insane. I feel like it's very rare that I'm so much in the zone and I rarely notice what's going on. So it's very rare that I really noticed individual voices or I can feel the crowd yelling. And this was one of those times though that I was just enveloped with like this sense of adrenaline where I could hear everything. Going into the last lap, I kind of took note of where number three was, and it was really a pack from like three to six, and I was in seventh. And I was just like, okay, we're around 200 to go. I need to be the first one to the turn. In 200 meters, I need to catch those guys. And so I was just, again, like focused on like, how am I going to get top three? Every move I make is intentional. And it's hard, but like, is he like, doubt keeps creeping in your mind. You're like, no, like, should I be passing them? Am I going to burn out? But every move is just like, go, go, go. Like, you need to get top three. And so with 400 to go, I was just, all these thoughts were just flooding my mind. Just like trying to tell myself, like, you know, positive affirmations, just like, you got to go, like, you're fine. Just go for it. And then with 300 to go is a spot that I had told myself that I'd be very intentional about. I'd practice this in practice, my last workout with Kenny, where around 300 to go, I really tried to pick it up and use that as a spot that I could make a definitive move and feel like it was my time to go. Not that I was being like dragged along, like this is my turn to make a move. And so with 300 to go, I started moving, and it was the best feeling, where I went from catching up to all of a sudden everyone was going at the same pace as me to then I was accelerating, and it was just like, oh my goodness, I'm going to catch these guys. And so then right before 200 to go, I hit the turn and I was like, I think I can catch third on the turn because I want to be on the inside for the water jump. And I ended up running right next to Hillary Bohr and accelerating on the water jump and just threw myself at it really recklessly, but it ended up being great. And the rest is kind of history. Just shows, like, shocking. The last 100 meters, my mouth was hanging wide open before I even crossed the line. Just like, oh my goodness. I
actually did it. Yeah. There's such a good picture of you just going like, what? Yeah. Like, both hands on the head. Oh, it's so good. Just, and like, we were all freaking out just for you. And we're happy with Kenny because we kind of expected Kenny. Course. But for you, it was like a moment of like, whoa, that's insane. And then we're like, wait, because you finished third. So for the listeners that don't like or aren't track and field nerds like we are, top three usually go to Paris. They make the team. But for you, you hadn't hit, no one had really hit the Olympic standard yet. And then your world ranking, which they base it off, you were lower, right?
Right, pretty low.
Pretty low on that list. So you were kind of out of contention to make the Olympics, but you finished third. And so it puts you kind of in a weird limbo state. Walk me through what the next kind of steps were those following days to see if you can make the Olympic team.
Yeah, so on my end, Ed told me, celebrate the next 24 or 48 hours. Like, it's your time. You did what you needed to do. Like, you couldn't have controlled anything else. You enjoy that. And then that same day, though, I mean, moments after I crossed the line, Ryan, our assistant coach, and Ed and Ray, my now agent, are just working and trying to get a meet set up or find a meet that's sanctioned through USATF, because it needed to be something official so that things would count, you know? And so they had to find a meet last minute that happened to be running in the next couple days before the window closed. So that was one thing. They had to make sure they had someone to help pace, make sure the steeplechase was actually added to the race, because the one we ended up running at didn't have the steeplechase as an event. So there's a couple of different things we were figuring out, you know, different funding, who was going to help us get out there, what time we'd leave. And so for those 24 hours, I was enjoying myself, just like signing autographs, you know, really soaking it up. It was so much fun. And then we got to business the next day, and we all sat down around a table and just talked about the steps we needed to do, which are all the things I talked about that kind of filled me in and let me know, here's the time you're going to have to run to be fully safe, which is under 8:15. And here's some leeway we think we might have, but let's not chance it. We're going to buy you some seconds, hopefully. And, you know, in the long run, it ended up, I believe the meet got downgraded. The standard would not have been enough based off the points I would have earned. A lot of people shifted in terms of points. And so I'm very glad we were able to just keep the focus on the highest goal, which is run under 8:15. And that was kind of the whole gist there. But
I think just people don't recognize what level that you had to hit. So there was, it ended that week. So you raced on a Sunday night, and then the window closed that following Sunday. So you only had a week really to hit the fastest time you've ever ran, the school record. No one's hit this standard at all. And they say, okay, let's throw all our chips on the table to see if James can do it.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about that pressure. Like, that's a lot of pressure on you that's around you. You can't really control that at all. Maybe take me through like the mental side of how did you handle that, or what did you handle? What came in? What was the hard part for you? All that.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that really went into handling the pressure. I didn't handle it very well at certain times, and certain times I feel like I did handle it well. So I guess times I didn't handle it the best were probably the day before, where I started letting it get to me, because I had just put a post out on social media. I was getting hundreds of comments of people with their love and support, and people wanted to DM me and stuff. And I think it really got into my head, and I was like, oh man, what if I let these people down? You know, there's people who are actually flying out to watch this. People are driving out their families. I was like, this is crazy. Like, I wanted this, but do I really want it? You know? And so I wasn't handling that very well. And then I told myself, you know, let's figure this out. And so I ended up calling Casey. I talked to Kenny and coach, and I was just like, how do you guys, you know, how should I handle this? And I was able to get some good advice from them. We talked a lot about gratitude and being grateful for the opportunities you have. You know, pressure is often inherent from good performances. So it's awesome. Like it's a privilege. Pressure is a privilege, as Coach says. And so that was one thing that really helped a lot. I tuned out of social media the 24 hours before. That helped. And I think most of all, I just tried to have tunnel vision. I think of like an analogy, like, you know, when you almost tell a baby that they should be sad, they start crying, like they hit themselves. And then if you don't give them any attention, they're fine. But yeah, the moment that you're like, oh, you're okay, like they start wailing. And I feel like that can be very much applied to us as runners, where when we're told something's hard, our body reacts accordingly. So when we tell ourselves something's hard, and it could be, you know, it's going to adjust accordingly. And so things might tighten up or tell us, you know, we're almost done, and your body starts shutting down. And so I think our body's in a way a lot like that crying baby, where you can tell it that you're fine and your muscles can relax a little more than they normally would. And so that week I was trying to tell myself as much as possible, Coach believes in me. That's enough for me. Like, he's a very realistic guy. Listen, body, you should be fine. Like, if Ed says we're fine, he's the one who writes our programs, we're fine. And so I think the positive things that I did were just having a lot of positive self-affirmations, being very mentally strong, and just focused, like just not letting anything else be on my mind stage except for just that one kind of point, which is, I'm fine, I got this.
Oh, I love that. Like, and I've, out of talking with all your fellow Olympians, you've all used that word opportunity, which is so interesting to me, where you see this as a gift, right? There's so many other people that in the right circumstances as you might be where you're at, right? Mm-hmm. But you've been blessed with this opportunity to go run this race, to hit that time, to make the Olympics. And you've recognized that too. And that, I think that just shows that you're not just like a physical athlete, but there's a lot of mental side of the sport too that you've really, really embraced. Let's talk about, what is your training like right now for the Olympics? What's it like day to day as an Olympian or future Olympian, I guess.
Yeah.
Can we use the Olympian word now?
I feel like we're
an Olympian.
Yeah.
So we can say that. Okay. What is day to day like as an Olympian right now?
It's pretty normal, pretty standard. If anything, it's been kind of tough. Like, I'm not doing anything special, nothing. There's no silver bullet now. Like, you know, nothing crazy I drink because I'm an Olympian, you know, like there's no new level of nutrition or anything, but
you don't just get like something random from Nike in the mail and they're just like, this is the magic Olympian potion.
Exactly. No, but training's pretty standard. And I've got to admit, it's been difficult. I took a couple days off. And then it was surrounding my marriage, and
that's right. Okay. Let's touch on that real quick. Okay. So you had like the most insane 3 weeks of your life, and then you got married right after that.
Yep.
And so normally for a normal person, James, that would be more stressful than any of the races, but you're just like, let's lump this all together.
That's right. Keep it all in the same spot. Yeah. I ended up getting married July 5th, the day after July 4th, which is a date we thought would be really fun, but we didn't think any of this would happen in the best way possible. You know, we didn't necessarily plan on all these amazing opportunities, but we'll take them. And so we looked at it as this is going to be insane, but we're just going to roll the punches. And yeah, we're going to miss out on a couple things we were planning on, but we're going to see what opportunities this opens for our marriage. And we're just going to, it's going to be like water off a duck's back. That's a phrase I like to use a lot. Just roll with it. And so, you know, getting married and, you know, having some, just changes of plans made it a little difficult on training. And, you know, I've had some bumps and bruises here and there. And just as a result of being an NCAA athlete who doesn't plan on racing this long, we still have another, you know, just under a month of racing. So it's, everything's a little longer than I expected. And so my body needs to sometimes take a little bit of rest. So workouts look pretty standard. They look pretty much the same as before. But I think what I'm trying to do a little bit better is just try to really focus and still stay in it mentally, because I think it's easy to be a tourist at the Olympics, and Coach and Kenny have been great at helping me understand we want to still compete. We want to be actively pursuing that race and not just be like a tourist at this race. And so I've tried my best to, I'm striving. That's a good way to put it. You know, I'm not perfect at it. And my Coach and my teammates and my wife know, like, I'm not perfect. And so there's nothing crazy that's going on all of a sudden. You know, I didn't become a superhero, and I'm just trying my best to just improve and just to stay locked in through the Olympics.
And what is that kind of like? We talked with Courtney a little bit about how her mental preparation, those things. Do you meditate? Do you journal? Is there something that you do on your side to kind of help you focus?
Honestly, runs are the times for me that I like to set aside time to think, especially if I'm running alone or if I'm in a pack where I can kind of not talk to anybody. I kind of just like to float to the back, and just it allows me some time to think where I physically can't do anything else. I think it's very easy to just be stressed about things when you're at home. You're like, oh, I have to do this. And so when I'm on a run, I physically can't do anything else but run. So I can kind of let myself think then. I don't really meditate outside of that. I'm trying to do better about journaling because I think it'll be great for my future self. But yeah, really on runs, I take the opportunity to visualize my races. Sometimes, like if I'm on a treadmill, I'll watch my previous races and really just try to remember what it was like and think about what I can improve on and just watch it over and over. And so it's like a movie, like a file in my head now. So I can picture one lap out of a certain race. And then when I'm racing, it allows me to just almost like pop that disc in and be like, oh, I've been in this situation. How did I handle that again? And so a lot of the times my doubles or runs, I'm just kind of reviewing races and just figuring out what I can do better. And it gets me through the run. So it's pretty entertaining.
So you're like a no music guy.
Oh,
like,
no.
You just like...
I can't do music.
Well, how many miles a week do you run, James?
Well, on a normal week, if everything's going good, my peak has been 80. And that's what I do on non-race.
80 miles a week with no music. I think that's an athletic accomplishment in itself, James. That's insane. I always have to have like a book or music or something. But that is cool. That's your space to kind of focus and just... It's more than just running. It's kind of working out your mind a little bit too.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to find peace and quiet outside of established time like that. And so it lets me, it's like the one time where my mind can truly just be focused on what I want it to be. Sometimes it's about other stuff, like how I'm going to make my kitchen look now that we have our own, you know.
Hey, that, like it can be fun too.
So it's great. I mean, I use my runs for all sorts of things, and sometimes it's random projects that I have in mind, and it's great because I'll just have tons of ideas on my runs and I just get excited about stuff and I start running way too fast and then I'm like, oh, okay, slow down. So, yeah.
Well, let's talk about the point of this show is really just to highlight athletes like you, BYU Olympians, and what you guys are doing in your lives, in all facets of your lives, to kind of be at this next level. And really, how has the BYU program helped these Olympians, right? So, in your career at BYU, you're just kind of halfway through your eligibility right now. Mm-hmm. What lessons or values or principles have you learned in the BYU system that has helped you get to this point?
That's a very good loaded question right there. Let's see. There's a lot of things I've learned at BYU that have helped me, but I think the environment that BYU fosters is what's helped me the most to be at the level I'm at right now. And that is a couple things. Like, one, being a university founded on the principles of the gospel of Jesus Christ is huge because, like, my religious background plays a huge role for me in my running and in the mental side, which I feel like is most of what really gets you that next step of success. And so when I read my scriptures and when I say prayers, I find strength through Jesus Christ. And when I learn about the way he handles situations in the scriptures, I apply those to my life. And so being at a school where I can be reminded of those things constantly, and I have teachers who remind us to pray, and I'm surrounded by fellow classmates who are good examples, really helps me just continue to use those good things I've already learned and continue to apply them to my running. And so that's one side. And I think the other side is being at BYU specifically, people aren't afraid to dream big. And again, it's part of our religion. Like, we are very hopeful people and we're not quitters. And the environment that's fostered at BYU, I think just success breeds success. And so you see that with our program in terms of our athletics. When, you know, we do good, it invites the rest of the team to kind of take a step up. The water in the harbor rises like all the boats. I butchered that, but that's a cool quote I like, where it talks about how when someone does good, it invites other people to do good. And it's just a good example. And so seeing my fellow teammates, alumni from BYU and current teammates, it just gets me excited. And so whenever they're doing things, I think I can do that too. And I think those two things combined are things that BYU has helped me with in my journey to becoming an Olympian.
Wow. Well said. That's amazing. In your career, has there been certain teammates that have really just stood out to you that you admire and kind of look up to?
I think Casey has been a super good one. And I know this might be like a cliche answer because he's a legend. He's super fast. But even if he weren't, I think the attitude that he takes into his running and life, I really admire, and I've learned a lot from him. even if it's just, even if he doesn't know it, you know, it's just like sometimes I'll ask him little questions. Starting last year when I was a freshman, I just ask him little things like, oh, why do you do that? Or could you tell me like how I can do this better? And his answers mean a lot to me. And something I've learned from him is that sometimes instead of focusing on having a huge volume of a ton of little things that you always want to be doing better at, sometimes it's better to just focus on the big things and do them really, really, really well. And so I think Casey's great at mastering the fundamentals, and what I like is being brilliant at the basics. And I think Casey is super good at that, and I've learned a lot from him, and even from just his example, but being able to talk to him, you know, throughout the season has been nice just to get some sage advice from him. And so I look up to him a lot, and I just really admire the fact that he doesn't need to, you know, win workouts. He doesn't need to feel like he's the best. He lets his running talk, and the way he handles himself in his training is a great example for life. It's just being really, really good at big, important priorities, and the little things fall where they will.
That is amazing. That's what I've kind of seen in my experience too from Casey a little bit, is he's so committed at the little things. And just kind of from our conversation overall, it sounds like you've really understood kind of a value that you've seen of having kind of a support network of people that I'm sure you are a part of that in someone else's life, but then you can call upon, just like before that race, you called Casey up. And so I guess, do you see kind of a value in having a support network?
Yeah. 100%. I mean, we see this with our church where we have ministering, and the idea is that everybody has somebody, and we create this network across the entire globe where everybody has someone they know they can rely on. And even if you're not a member of the church, you know, there's technically somebody that's over your area of the world that's looking out for you if you needed it. And so it's a pretty cool idea. And I think we implemented that a little bit last cross country season, where the reason I instinctually reach out to Casey is because he's actually my accountability partner as well. And so there definitely is a network.
An accountability partner. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We set those last cross country season, and we had a team meeting, and we just all paired up with somebody, and whether it fizzled out, whether they never used it, it was there, you know, and we started it, and our, you know, texting was on and off, and sometimes it wasn't the greatest, but at least I knew that there was someone I could automatically talk to, and it wouldn't be weird. And like, it was an established kind of network where I knew that I had somebody to talk to and ask questions from. So
an accountability partner. So you would text Casey of like, hey, this is what I committed to in my workout or something?
Yeah, we set a couple goals, and so you could be committed to that. Or in our case, something that I really needed help on was making sure I was getting to bed at a consistent time. And so to be accountable, I told Casey, hey, I'm looking to work on this. And this was separate from our original goals we had set. I feel like we kind of forgot about those, and we just kind of found our groove. And sometimes it was him just updating me, and maybe it was a couple times throughout the year, you know, just like on injuries. But for me, it was huge to be able to just text and be like, okay, headed to bed. And, you know, our cute goodnight texts, I guess, were like very helpful and influential for me, because it just gave me someone to be accountable to. And then also just kept that door open when I had questions.
Wow. I think anyone, athlete or not, right, can really benefit from having that kind of relationship where it, no matter what your goal is, you can totally just be wayward if you don't have anyone else kind of tied to that to support you.
Right.
And so that, I think, is amazing to have.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, let's dive into kind of the last part. It's kind of this lightning round, but it's really just whatever you really want to talk about. One question I have for you is, we said you're not a tourist in Paris, and you're not. You're an athlete. But is there something in Paris that you're excited to see?
Eiffel Tower. I mean, I've never been outside the country, so whenever
you've never been outside the country, no. And your first trip was to the Olympics.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
So, I mean, when I think of, you know, where we're headed, the only spot I can think of off the top of my head is the Eiffel Tower. So
that'd be pretty fun. I bet your wife is excited to see the Eiffel Tower too.
That's right.
What is your training like during the Olympics? Do you know, like, in the village, or what that whole situation is like?
Yeah, so I have a little bit of information on that, and all I know is that we're getting there for the opening ceremonies, and then pretty quickly we're leaving to Switzerland so we can get some altitude training, just because we don't race in the games until further down the line. And so to keep some normality there, we're going to head up to Switzerland at San Moritz training camp. So I'm pretty stoked for that. I mean, everybody we talk to that's been there is just like over the moon about it. They're like, it's so gorgeous. You'll have such a great time. So that'll be the plan, and then we'll head back down a couple days before our races, and yeah, just get ready to go.
Nice. Okay. Favorite running shoe?
Favorite running shoe. Well, we're a Nike school, so I
way to plug. Nice. Yeah.
To be fair, I actually have not worn anything but Nike since I've been here. Huh? So I know sometimes it's, you know, people have their favorite amidst the ones they wear sometimes, but I think the Nike Pegasus are a classic, and I've learned to love them. After my mission, it was really hard because they felt so stiff. But as I've gone through, you know, the Nike Pegasus and then the Infinities and the Invincibles and some different shoes, I think I still come back to the good old Pegs as just a classic trainer that I use every single day. So
nice. Nike Peg.
Yep.
Okay. What is your favorite sports movie?
Sports movie. I feel like I'm obligated to pick McFarland USA because of running, but I'm trying to think of...
It's going to be like Nacho Libre.
Yeah, that's considered a sport, right? We'll say Napoleon Dynamite because he's got some like kickboxing
that's
in there.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah, it is an athletic movie.
He rides a bike in it at some point.
Oh,
so.
True. I think we just started some Twitter war, but this will be great. Okay. Who's someone that you would want to go on a run with that you haven't gone on a run with? Celebrity or like famous athlete or anything?
Can it be someone from the past as well?
Can be.
Oh, man. This is so tough, actually. You just opened a can of worms.
Yes.
I wish I could pick one from like each category that I have a reason for. You know?
Ooh, let's go.
But I would say, okay, a couple like off the top of my head right now, if it was someone current, I'd love to go on a run with Jakob Ingebrigtsen. Yeah. I think it'd be super fun. I just like would love to pick his brain. I think he's such an interesting athlete. And I know he gets a lot of flack for some of the things he says, but I admire his confidence and it'd just be really interesting. So that's one for just like a current athlete. I think a past athlete. Oh man. It'd be tied for me between Mo Farah and technically he's still alive. So
that's true.
He's a past athlete. Mo Farah, I've learned so much from that guy just watching him race. And then Bekele, who set the, I think, 5K world record and possibly 10K. Let me see, held them at one point. But super cool guys. I think it'd be fun.
Let's make it happen. We can have it. You're an Olympian now. You can just throw that title out there. You're like, right. I'm one of you.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've learned so much from watching those guys and like in every, you know, they're all in different events, which is why it's great. And they all run so differently. And so I think it's fun to like pull different things from their racing styles. And like, I mean, like in the steeplechase, you'll see me go out in dead last and like, it's intentional, whether or not people think it is, you know, like I just kind of float to the front when I want to or stay back. And I'm like, I picture some of these guys that I watch on YouTube and I'm like, just, it's like you have a big toolbox of all their moves and you just can kind of pull them out. So it'd be interesting to pick their brains and see, you know, what else I could learn from them.
That's cool. That's cool. Okay. So pretty much we've talked about so much today, seeing your mental side, your physical side, what this whole experience has been like. If there's anything that you would want listeners to know about you or about BYU as we kind of wrap up, what would that be?
Oh man, anything I can share. Let's see. I think I shared this a couple of times with a couple other people, and I'll share it again because I think it's so important that there is no silver bullet. There's no like secret sauce. And I know people are going to say, well, then how did you jump 33 seconds or how did you jump 40 seconds over the last year, you know? And I think it's hard because people will see what they want to see. You know, if they were in my shoes when all of it happened, it would look a lot different. But from my perspective, from the guy who did it, I want everybody to know that it was a lot of good choices along the way and I made mistakes. But in spite of those things, trusting my coach and just doing the important things, not overthinking things, really is what led to the success that I wanted to see and ultimately did get to see. And so that's the note I'd love to leave on, is that in the gospel and in life and really anything you do, sometimes you just have to be patient. Things happen when they're going to happen, but there's no silver bullet. There's no quick fix or easy way to get where you want to go. It's just about making good, consistent choices.
Amazing. Perfect. Well, thanks so much for spending time today. I've learned a lot about kind of what this experience is like for you, and hopefully the listeners did as well. So thanks again for being on.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me on. This is fun.
That was an amazing conversation with James, and I'm so glad of how willing he was to be open about his feelings with this unique opportunity he has to chase his Olympic dreams. The first round of the men's steeplechase will feature both James and his teammate Kenneth Rooks. It is slated for Monday, August 5th, with coverage on the NBC family of networks. Cougar Gold is partnered with BYU Athletics and produced by Cleon Wall, Ethan Horn, and Joseph Guffey. Episodes are available on byuradio.org, the BYU Radio app, and wherever you can find podcasts. Check out our social media for more Olympic content.